I guess, questions?
Could you open up the question?
Okay. Yes, please.
Earlier this year, Robert Fisk...
If you can just speak up, please, because
earlier this year, Robert Fisk, longtime reporter and journalist, visited Santa Cruz, and his Q&A period was asked specifically to address the BDS movement. And his immediate answer, quite matter-of-factly, was, he said, look, boycotting Israel and Israeli products can never work because the United States government will simply cover any losses for Israel. Do you see this to be the case?
No, he's just wrong. I mean, the U.S. will soon need a lot of help to save itself. I mean, it is the only empire in the world, it's true. But with the financial crisis mounting, and with the social movements in the U.S. questioning, why are we wasting trillions killing people around the world? What are we gaining from all this war and pillage and destruction around the world? So I don't think that the U.S. can continue to save Israel forever. We're already seeing cracks in the wall, with many people questioning. Even a Republican presidential candidate is questioning aid to Israel. I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, no one ever dared to question aid to Israel that high up in a presidential election candidate. So I think there are changes, and people are noticing that this is not tenable. This blanket, blind support for Israel is untenable, because many people are questioning it. And Israel is not just reliant on the U.S., it's reliant on Western Europe and the rest of the world. Israel sells lots of goods and services to Europe, not just to the U.S. The U.S. cannot cover that loss. I mean, Agrexco went bankrupt. Where was the U.S. to save it? It lost its major markets in Europe. It doesn't have a huge market in the U.S. So I don't think anyone should look at the U.S. as this omnipotent power that can do everything to everyone and save its partner, Israel, every time. No, it doesn't work quite that way, I think.
Yes. Thank you. The question when you were talking about, was it nitrites or nitrites?
If you can speak up, please.
Yes, when you were talking about the water supply and the illness for the Palestinian children, don't those compounds also affect fertility?
Yes, the water supply, I'm not sure, but the other toxic material in the ground, due to the Israeli bombs used and munitions used, Israel used a lot of non-conventional weapons on Gaza, end of 2008-2009. There's an Italy-based group of scientists who disclosed what kind of contamination is happening to the ground in Gaza due to the munitions used by Israel in its war, and that was proven to have a devastating impact on fertility, cancer, and other diseases, deformities, and so on. Yes, sir.
Omar, how would you answer the critics of BDS who say that it's fine to boycott products from that are promoting or sustaining the occupation, but not products produced by Israel, because then you are being essentially anti-Israel, you are siding with the terrorists who want to destroy Israel, drive it into the sea, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to make that kind of distinction.
Okay, there's a difference between making this argument as you expressed it, as a principled objection to boycotting Israel, or as a tactical. The tactical objection to boycotting Israel, as in boycotting settlement products is easier, that's not a problem. Because as I said, BDS is about local initiative and local decision making, what to target, what not to target. If you feel that all I can target in Santa Cruz are certain products, are Hewlett-Packard, let's say, or bad example, any other specific product, then that's what activists in any context can decide. But if the objection to boycotting Israel is principled, as you've expressed it, as in boycotting settlements is fine, boycotting Israel is not, because it would destroy Israel, that's the definition of hypocrisy. hypocrisy. Those calling for a boycott of Darfur, of Sudan over Darfur, never said boycott products coming from Darfur or divest from companies that exist in Darfur. Those calling for boycotting China over Tibet never said boycott Chinese products made in Tibet. Boycott China. Only when it comes to Israel do we hear this nonsense, this total hypocritical nonsense. And it's mainly made by the Zionist liberals who want to save Israel as an apartheid state. Israel is not about occupation only. As I explained, it's about apartheid, denial of refugee rights, and occupation. Plus, even if you are not concerned about the human rights of two-thirds of the Palestinian people, we can tell those people, even if all your concern is the 38% who reside in the occupied territories, so all you're opposing is the occupation, settlements, and the wall, Israel should be punished for the occupation, settlements, and war. It's Israel that's perpetrating those crimes and those violations of international law. In international law, we don't know anything called the occupation. It's not an entity. It's not a state that we can deal with. International law deals with states. The state responsible for the occupation is the state of Israel. So if you want to end the occupation, you want to boycott the state perpetrating the occupation. It's not an external factor to Israel. The occupation is Israel. That's the one doing the occupation. Now, some people go even farther than those that you've quoted and say, oh, boycotting Israel would be anti-Semitic because it reminds us of boycotting Jews during the Nazi era, blah, blah, blah. Now, anyone saying that is an anti-Semite, in my view. Anyone saying boycotting Israel is boycotting Jews is an anti-Semite because he or she is saying that Israel and Jews are one and the same, which means all Jews are monolithic, are one huge herd who have one view. They don't have human diversity. They're not human. They're subhuman, as the Nazis would have it, or superhumans, as Zionists would have it, but certainly not human, not part of the human species, because in the human species, we have diversity. Those who say all Jews are anti-Semitic by definition. Whether you say all Jews are smart or all Jews are dumb, all Jews are rich, all Jews are anything, is an anti-Semitic statement because there is no all Jews are. There's human diversity among Jews. The number of Jewish activists leading BDS campaigns in the US is disproportionately high. Disproportionately high. Yes?
What is your vision for the future of Palestine?
As a representative of the BDS movement, I must say that we do not take a position on the one state, two state solution. We remain neutral on that issue. As a rights-based campaign, we stress the three basic rights, and we say regardless if you want to call for one state or two states, those basic rights must be observed and respected, regardless, in a one state or two state solution. Refugees have a right to go back, regardless whether you have one state or two states. People deserve equality regardless if you have one state, two states. Now, personally, and I'm representing myself, not the BDS movement, I've advocated for three decades a secular democratic state in historic Palestine. I never believed in a two-state solution. I believe in equal rights for all human beings in one common state, where the refugees are allowed back and everyone enjoys equal rights, not based on ethnicity. I'm against allocating rights according to ethnicity. I'm against dividing historic Palestine into two states, because that will never be morally acceptable. That will never address all the injustices that have been committed, in my view, as outside the BDS movement. In the BDS movement, we take no position. Yes? If you can please speak up. It's a huge room. We still can't hear you. You really have to shout. It's a very big room.
The idea was to create like a multi-state solution, and I guess you guys have it personally, but I'm wondering how it is supposed to be in response to an apartheid Israel, how that is reconciled with not having a vision for.
I'm not sure I understand. If you can rephrase it, maybe.
I guess. What's the other question?
create separate states, Babel states, for this Black Africans. I'm just curious as to what the decision to not choose to pick one center or another when it comes to this.
If I understand you correctly, what we're focusing on are the rights, because that's what matters. People want their rights, regardless who's governing, regardless how you divide this land. We need our rights. The point is, even in a two-state solution, assuming tomorrow we have a Palestine and an Israel, assuming, on the 67 borders, still each state has to respect its obligations under international law. Israel would still have to admit all the refugees that it had expelled and their descendants. There's no way out. Just because you're Israel does not give you a right to be an apartheid state. You still have to respect international law. You still have to end your apartheid system, the state of Israel. You have to cancel all the racist laws that you have, nullify them, because Israel has dozens of racist laws. So that obligation won't go away if you just have a two-state solution. So logically, BDS is not biased towards one state or two states. In fact, most of civil society groups that make up the BDS National Committee are pro-two states, until now, the majority. We are in a minority calling for one state. So this is not a debate we bring to the table in the BDS movement. But outside, we do. Each one of us advocates his or her preferred solution. Now, I believe in a one-state solution because, to me, practically and morally, that's the best solution that can accommodate the inalienable rights of the indigenous Palestinians and what I call the acquired rights of the settlers, of the Israeli settlers, the colonial settlement community. If we look at South Africa, for example, ultimately, they formed one nation, one state, with everyone enjoying equal rights, at least political rights. Economically, we still have economic apartheid in South Africa. That's not over yet. There are many problems in South Africa. But at least at a political level, they ended political apartheid. They ended white better than black kind of system. So in a democratic state where people enjoy equal rights and the refugees are allowed back and allowed to get what they've lost back, or to get fair compensation for it if it's impossible to return it, then we can establish one state with equal rights for all. I hope I addressed your question. You have to speak up. Okay. Yes.
Israel is a large exporter of arms, weapons, parts, etc. Has there been any attempt to put pressure on other governments not to buy their weapons in the United States government too? I read articles all the time about, you know, we're getting this from Israel or some country is getting it. Has that been explored?
Sure. In 2011, the BNC called for an arms embargo, a military embargo, which is beyond arms. It's also military research, because Israel makes a ton of money on military research. They try a lot of things on us, on the Palestinians, and then they sell their goods and services to the world as field tested. So we called for a full military embargo. Now, calling for a military embargo and making it happen are two different things, as you know. Amnesty International has also called for a military embargo on the entire region, which we support. And some people say, but Amnesty is bringing this parity. Both sides, okay, we have a problem with Amnesty's parity, but you know what? Don't sell F-16s to Hamas. We'll live with it. Don't sell nuclear submarines to Hamas either. We'll live with it. So you see where I'm going. It's okay. Ban all weapon sales to this region. Ban all buying of weapons, purchases from that region. We're happy with it. Be unfair and deal with both sides as if they were equal. But it takes a lot of grassroots campaigning. Pressuring governments means pressuring churches and trade unions and feminist groups and students. That's what pressuring means. We have no access to Obama. Hello, cut weapons to Israel. Neither do we have to Merkel or Sarkozy or any other leader in the Western world. The only places where we've had successes was when we had massive civil society action to pressure government, as in Norway. civil society in Norway pressured government enough that they don't sell weapons to Israel. Norway officially refuses to sell weapons to Israel, does not buy weapons from Israel, does not allow passage of weapons to Israel through its territory. So Norway is the vanguard as far as the military embargo is concerned. We need to emulate that success in other countries. But again, the US is the last, it's the most difficult. That would take a lot of work. But I think with the mounting economic crisis, there's a good argument to be made about cutting military aid to Israel, at least military aid, this 30 billion in 10 years. There's a very strong argument that can resonate with communities in the US, the unemployed and communities of color and so on. Everyone who's feeling the pinch of this financial crisis will sympathize with our call. Why should we send $30 billion to Israel for military aid?
Our own representative, Sam Farr, is on the House Appropriations Committee, so we really do have a little influence.
Okay, go ahead.
I was wondering, are you familiar with the peace movement in Israel, and can you tell us a little bit about what's happening to the people that are on in the streets, and how the Israeli government is treating them, and is there any success within that movement that has achieved any goals in Israel, there's a complete blackout, so it's kind of...
Yeah. Well, there's no peace movement in Israel. Worthy of a name, peace. I mean, if we talk about peace based on justice, there doesn't exist. There's no movement in Israel. There's small groups, effective, gaining more influence, but they're still very tiny, that are ready to renounce the occupation, condemn Israel's racist system and racist laws. Because if you talk about basic human rights, at the very least, you believe in equal rights for human beings. So a movement that does not believe in equal rights for human beings is not worth the name peace movement. What does it mean? I mean, if you believe in racism, but you call yourself anti-war, big deal. You still believe that certain people are lower based on their ethnicity or religion. That describes what's so-called peace movement in Israel. Peace Now and all these other Zionist groups, they don't believe in equal rights for human beings. They believe that there's a supremacy for Jewish rights in the country, and non-Jews should always remain under. So there's no peace movement as such. As for the tent movement, this copycat Arab Spring attempt, it's really a lousy attempt. Because, yes, at one point you had hundreds of thousands of Israelis going to the street, demanding lower rent and some improvement in this or that, lower prices for cottage cheese and whatnot. But what about the occupation? I mean, the big elephant in the room was completely ignored by this so-called social justice movement. Completely ignored. As if Israel does not spend a large chunk of its budget on repression and occupation and ethnic cleansing and so on. So even if you're completely selfish, if you couldn't care less about the Palestinians, which you as an Israeli community are suppressing, this lack of social justice and the inequalities in Israel are directly connected, correlated with the system of occupation and apartheid. It's illogical to struggle for social justice in Israel while ignoring apartheid and occupation. They're directly connected, yet they were completely ignored. So we do not take this movement in Israel very seriously at all. It's an attempt to add cosmetic change to the system of oppression, as in the cartoon I had. Nothing more than that. Yes?
Can we go to Gaza?
There's no easy answer. Some people have made it, some have not. It depends on through Israel it's impossible. But through Egypt, it is more possible, but very slightly more possible than during Mubarak's regime. In Egypt, you still have a military regime, a military junta supported by the US. So the democracy movement is still a grassroots movement and trying to shape its government. We don't yet have democracy in Egypt. We still have a military junta in power in Egypt, which takes its orders from Washington, largely. So it's not it's not easy to answer that. And it's too much of a risk for someone to go all the way and try and be turned back. It's devastating. I know from friends who are turned back. So I have no advice in that respect, but I think it's worth pressuring the Egyptian regime to allow people to enter Gaza. And some people have succeeded with that. Yes?
Are there any places in the United States that local communities have done effective boycotting of particular products from Israel? And what about the Bay Area here? Because I think all of us would like to, or most of us here would like to, in some small way, be involved. And is that at all helpful? Or are you really only talking about large institutions?
Thanks. No, everything helps. Boycotting at the Trader Joe's level helps. Boycotting at an individual level helps, because the cumulative effect is what helps. If you just do it on your own and no one else is involved, it's clearly not helpful. But if it goes viral, as you say in this country, if it goes from one to another to another to another, and soon enough communities catch on, then it'll be extremely effective. So yes, at an institutional level is extremely important, but also at an individual level. The Olympia Food Co-op boycotted, was the first to boycott all Israeli products. They took them off the shelves. Now you go to the Olympia Food Co-op in the state of Washington and you don't find Israeli products. But that's the only supermarket in the country, in the Western Hemisphere, as I said. There's no other. They were really at the forefront of everyone. So we need to, the best support we can give Olympia is to replicate that experience. And then they're not scapegoated. They're not alone. Because if they're alone, God help them with the lobby, I mean, on top of them, wanting to destroy them completely. If we start similar campaigns, even if they're not successful immediately, if they're longer term, just the fact that Park Slope in New York are trying to have a boycott on at least settlement products, and just, you know, another supermarket here, another supermarket, if this mushrooms, then that can have a great effect for the BDS movement in this country. But certainly for 2012, our top priorities are the Methodist and the Presbyterians, because both of them have their general conferences, the Methodists April, May, and the Presbyterians in July. And both of them have motions calling for divestment, ethical investment. Given the size of both churches, I mean, the Methodist has a huge pension fund, as you know, and the Presbyterian is very strong politically. If either church passes a divestment resolution, it will be a game changer in the US. It will open up the door for other smaller groups, smaller congregations, and supermarkets, and colleges, and so on, that it's acceptable. It's now in the mainstream. We absolutely need to push in 2012 for the Methodists and the Presbyterians to pass those divestment resolutions, and then life will become much easier. The best way to connect for an individual who's not part of an institution, not a union, not a university, not, and so on, is to connect with an active BDS group in your locality, as I'm sure there are quite a few groups that are doing BDS. So the best thing is to connect with them, because collectively we can do it. Yes. And then you. But go ahead. Yes.
So you're saying to get the Palestinians back their land, the Israelis that forcibly take them away from
them? You mean Palestinian refugees? Or what?
Because the Palestinians are refugees, right?
Right.
And then the Israelis, you know, the government take them away their land, right?
Right.
So you're saying to end it, you know, justice, not peace, peace would be to, you know,
justice and peace, not
yeah,
peace.
Yeah. Course,
yeah.
Like, when you said justice, peace would be to, you know, stop all the fighting, the Israelis stay where they are, and the Palestinians stay where they are, and it doesn't really change the fact that the Palestinians and other Israelis have, you know, taken all the land. And
yes. Yes, certainly. Returning stolen land to its rightful owners is part of any just solution. There's no question about that. That's in the UN resolution, that those refugees are entitled to go back to their lands from which they were expelled.
And that the mass up there,
mm-hmm.
is that, would it go back to, you know, generations of lost land, or would it just go back to, well, obviously generations?
It's not that long away. It's 1948. I mean, the Palestinian dispossession is not that old. It's very well documented. It all started in 1947 until now. So it's really recent.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. Everything has deeds. The Ottomans and the British, who used to occupy Palestine in various times, are very bureaucratic, which is good. They document everything. Every piece of land has a deed and a name. Palestinians have a habit of calling their lands names.
Yeah.
So it's not 3 acres there. This is the Fatima piece, and this is the every piece of land has a name. So Palestinians know exactly what pieces of land they own by the inch.
Yeah. So if you were to give Palestinians back their land, how many extra, how many Israelis by maybe one generation, two generations, how many of those would have to go back to an Israeli, Israel, which would now be?
Oh, no. You misunderstood. Most of the land from which the refugees were expelled would be in Israel, not in what a Palestinian state would be. It's not in the West Bank and Gaza. Most of the refugees were expelled from this area, not from the West Bank and Gaza. This is where most of the refugees came from, the north of what's now Israel. And to a large extent, many refugees went to the West Bank, and many went to Gaza, many were expelled to Lebanon, to Jordan, and to Syria. But the majority came from this. That area is where the great majority of Palestinian refugees come from. That's where their lands are. If you visit the Galilee, the north of Israel, now, as I said, more than 500 villages were destroyed. Up till now, you go to some locations and they're still empty. You still see the stones on top of each other and ruins. Not all of it. But one Palestinian researcher, Dr. Salman Abu Sitte, did a survey a number of years ago, and he said up to 80-some% of Palestinian refugee lands are still empty. So you won't need to displace anyone out of them. They're empty. Which is an important statistic.
Yeah. And one more question would be, is there a web, probably website, obviously, but afterwards, maybe give us some information about that so I could, kind of understand more, because I'm not too caught up on the
political
stuff. And is there a way to get involved in the BDS movement?
Sure. First, the groups that are doing BDS here, as I said, that's the best place to start. And I'm sure some representatives of groups here doing BDS can identify themselves. But the website for the BDS movement is simple, bdsmovement.net. BDS movement. The academic part, academic and cultural boycott part, is pacbi.org, pacbi.org, Palestinian Academic Cultural Boycott of Israel.org.
Can I make a quick announcement?
Sure.
Right now, what we're doing is we're passing around sign-up sheets to get involved in our BDS.
Great.
We have a local group
that's your answer.
Now formed and is organizing to start taking action. So there's that sign-up. And then there's a donation basket going around. The donations will go to two things. One, to the U.S. campaign to end the occupation, and the other one to our local group here. So please donate if you can. And then we have one more announcement at the end, but go ahead.
And another thing you can do is buy my book. Now, why I'm shamelessly advocating this? Because my author's proceeds go entirely to PACBI. I don't make a penny out of the book. If I were to make money, I would not promote it. I would feel ashamed, but I'm not ashamed. Because if you buy the book, part of this money goes to PACBI. I don't get anything out of it. Second, the book, in my view, documents, take stock of the most important arguments, counter BDS, pro BDS, because we don't get an opportunity to debate. I mean, most often we beg and beg anyone from the other side to debate us, and they refuse. They're so scared. I mean, for good reason. They have no argument. So we end up debating ourselves. So this book has every single anti-BDS argument you can think of is there. And the response to it.
It's very compelling. Like,
Well, the book has a lot about the history and about it places BDS in the history that I explained. So I think it does a fair job in explaining that context. Yes. Sorry, there was a woman at the end, and then you.
Yeah. This is in response to Bert's question. This is about a couple of very small, but perhaps if you go viral, very supportive local actions. You can go by Heart's Fabric and thank them for pulling fabric swatches that were being made and sold from Israel. I went to cover some chairs, and I selected my fabric. And I was so excited, I had exactly what I wanted, and if I read the specs, I got to the fact that it was made in Israel, so I told them I could not purchase the product. And I had a heart-to-heart conversation, and a long conversation, and the owner of Hearts agreed to pull that fabric swatch. So by going by and thanking someone, and the more of us that do it, the more meaningful that will be, and the more they'll continue to do that. Also, if you'll notice in Bed Bath & Beyond, if you're at the register, that entire wall is filled with SodaStream. Please return anything you bought from Bed Bath & Beyond. Ask to speak to the manager and tell them you cannot shop there until all of those SodaStreams come off. I think that locally that's really helpful, and then through the Resource Center, we can work on some campaign letters. We can all put our names on, delivering those to our congressman, Sam Farr, others.
Well, some examples, British and French BDS activists, what they do in supermarkets, and you can do this in Bed Bath & Beyond, if you like, is they go with their shopping carts and they take every Israeli product from the shelves, and every single Israeli product, they pile it up on their carts. I mean, they go by the dozen, so they really grab every single Israeli product. And then at the checkout counter, they look at each product. Oh, this is 729. If the barcode starts 729, it's an Israeli product. Oh, 729, this is Israeli, put it back. 729, put it back. They end up putting back everything. And the supermarket spends hours to reshelf them. It takes a long, so in the meanwhile, no one buys them. And then they speak to the managers that, you know, we were about to buy like $1,000 worth of equipment, things from you, but we're putting it back because it's Israeli. When so many shoppers do this day in and day out, you don't have to go together, you know, every few days somebody goes and does the same trick and speaks to the manager, complaint after complaint, then it gets the impact. You get some impact there. Yes, go ahead.
What about a company like, let's say, Xerox, that does business with Israeli government or businesses? Is there some attempt to address U.S. companies that are doing business with Israel?
Of course, U.S. companies. We're talking about Caterpillar, Hewlett-Packard, Motorola, these are all U.S. companies. The thing is about strategy. We can't boycott every single company that's profiting from Israel's economy. It's impossible. There's too many. Otherwise, you end up, you know, boycotting everything. So we have to be strategic. We start with the lower hanging fruits, as it were, with targets that we can win, that we can rally massive support and we can win. Winning can be one of two ways, either pressuring the company to relocate, to stop being complicit in Israel, to stop being complicit in the settlements even. That would be a step towards a full boycott, which is great. Or hurting the company's finances so much that the stockholders start questioning, like in the Veolia and Alstom examples. Now the shareholders of Veolia are shouting, why have we lost contracts worth $12 billion over that $100 million project in Israel? For what? Our entire profit from this Israeli project is worth nothing compared to what we've lost. So it's an ideological commitment to Israel rather than a profit commitment. And companies should do profit. They don't do ideology. So when you show them to be biased ideologically, not financially, then you get the shareholders to shout with you. So Intel, Microsoft are some of the biggest sinners that directly support the Israeli violations of international law, but they're very difficult to boycott. So we have not yet called for boycotting Intel or Microsoft. It's too difficult. They're too pervasive. They're everywhere. It's too difficult. But if you see something like Motorola, mainly mobile phones, right? You have a million other options, and Motorola are lousy phones anyway. So it's a better campaign. You can convince people easily, forget Motorola, buy something else. But Microsoft, not easy. If you don't have a Mac, how you can you convince people don't buy Microsoft? What do you buy? It's still not acceptable. Unix and the other alternatives are not yet popular. Sorry? Macintosh not only has chips from Intel, Apple is opening a research center in Israel, a huge research center in Israel. And now we're studying how to start engaging them with the threat of a boycott. Now, the difference between Apple and Microsoft is that Apple tries to appear as socially responsible. They try to say, we care. They care about their image, mainly because they sell to younger people. Really, younger people around the world, they buy Mac. But because their main market is younger people, we have some more impact that we can make because we appeal to younger people as well. BDS campaign is growing among younger people. So we can hurt Mac's sales, especially in the Arab world, but far beyond the Arab world, in France and Britain and possibly parts of the US, if we call for a boycott. But before going there, we want to engage Apple and see if we can convince them to find another place. It does not make sense for Apple to have its factory in Israel. It really does not make sense on financial or technological grounds. You can get the same in India at half the price, possibly.
Why don't?
I wouldn't know, but I think there's a lot of ideology going on in these companies. Intel's factory in Israel was not economic and technological only. There are political factors as well involved. Some Zionists on the board, some, you know, there are all kinds of considerations that are not necessarily financial. Yes?
You may have addressed this earlier, but you said several things about Silicon Valley industry, which we have rather immediate access to. On the macro level, the degree to which the United States government relies upon Israel and Israeli companies for our security system. Security contracts extremely compromise the security of the United States, the upper commonwealth, or the, independence of the United States from other nations, particularly Israel.
Right.
It seems to me that we're not going to be able to do it here in this living room. I agree with you. Science is low hanging fruit. But strategically, we have a Silicon Valley related community need to take that issue seriously and begin addressing it with you and others.
It's best,
politically,
yeah.
It's politically indefensible, it's economically indefensible.
Exactly.
And if the United States wants to continue having an empire, we can't make that kind of contract.
It's true, but
I don't want to.
Yeah. In discussions with corporations, from our experience, you need the stick with the carrot. You always need a big stick with the carrot. So there has to be a reasonable threat of boycott, that you might lose major revenues unless you get out of this complicity in Israeli business. And the security dimension you mentioned is extremely important. I mean, this is something most Americans do not know, how they've been invaded by Israeli security systems. I remember post 9/11, it was exposed that one Israeli company, Comcast or I don't know. One Israeli company was handling the telephone billing for like most of the US. So that company has records of every single phone call going from everyone to everyone across the US. And they found some links between this company and the Mossad. I read this in American papers. And then it went silent. Nothing was raised about this issue. No one knew what happened to it. And there was a TV program on Fox News, of all channels. Fox News exposed this. I saw it on TV. And then it disappeared. You can't even find it on their website. It disappeared. It doesn't exist on the net. It disappeared. So yes, there's a serious security issue that we can use to convince the public about. And in many of these cases, we're not telling HP or Motorola that we want to destroy you. We want you to go bankrupt. We're telling them, we will pressure you to get out of there so that you don't go bankrupt, so that you don't lose your business. So it's a positive incentive to maintain your business, not the other way around. We want to clean you of your complicity, so to speak. Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering what you would say about
please speak up.
Affinities.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you mentioned Apple and ideological affinities.
I don't know. I was guessing. I have no idea why, but it just does not make sense to me.
Well, there may be. For instance, Sabra Foods, Starbucks.
Well, Sabra is different. Sabra is Israeli. So that's Sabra is Israeli.
Is it
Sabra and Tribe are Israeli. That's not an American company. That's an Israeli company. Yes.
That works out of Trader Joe's and others.
Yes. That's why there was a campaign to boycott Sabra and Tribe, and there were flash mobs in Trader Joe's and so on.
Happy Feet, great shoes, women's shoes. Happy Feet sold a lot in Santa Cruz. There's so many. It's an Israeli company made in Israel on the shoes.
Hmm.
Are these legitimate
targets? Of course. Any Israeli product that can be boycotted should be boycotted. Because there isn't any Israeli company that's not complicit. Uh-huh. We're not aware of any.
Okay. Starbucks is different.
Starbucks is different. As much as we would have loved to find a smoking gun, we were not able to. In our boycott guidelines, we focus on institutional links between corporations and Israel. Starbucks has no institutional links with Israel. The problem is the CEO has total ideological bias. He's an ardent right-wing Zionist who supports the army, not just Israel. But he's the CEO. He's not Starbucks. So we have not called officially for a boycott of Starbucks. I personally boycott Starbucks. I don't go to Starbucks. I just don't feel right. But as a movement, we have not called for boycott in Starbucks because we stick to our guidelines. We're very professional about the guidelines. It's not enough to be angry at a company, oh, boycott it. We have to prove the institution complicity. Okay.
One last question.
Is there any way of positively requesting Israeli civil society or recommending people to
I can't hear the last part. I couldn't hear at all.
Come you have to come up to the front and ask your question, please.
I was asking if there's any form of positive reinforcement being done in canon or related to the
positive reinforcement.
To positively reinforce the
grant in the US?
In Israel.
Okay. BDS is then reinforced. I mean, there's no way to convince a colonial community to give up its colonial privilege except with sustained effective pressure. Now, and of course, the carrot, if you will, is that, as one Palestinian young activist called it, we need co-resistance, not coexistence, until oppression ends. So long as oppression remains, the only form of coexistence that's acceptable to us is co-resistance. So we invite Israelis to join us in the struggle. And the way we see it is that by liberating ourselves, we're liberating them from their colonialism. Israelis, by dehumanizing us, are dehumanizing themselves as well. As I said earlier in a presentation this afternoon, an Israeli soldier, 19-year-old, at a checkpoint preventing a pregnant Palestinian woman from going to a hospital and forcing her to give birth to a dead baby at the checkpoint is certainly losing his humanity. He cannot go home and be a normal human being. He's losing that humanity. In BDS, in this kind of morally consistent form of struggle, we don't want to destroy the other. We want to decolonize them as well. By decolonizing ourselves, our land, our minds, we're decolonizing them. We're helping Israelis to become normal humans, not savage colonialists.
Yeah. Seven books left, they're $15. And one last announcement. On the 26th of this month, we have Rabbi Michael Lerner coming to the New Resource Center at 7 p.m. Another book signing, Embracing Israel-Palestine. Thank you very much, Mr. Barghouti, for coming. We really appreciate it.